Old Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Good morning. It's the 22nd of September, 2021. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Thank you, Digital Henry. Perhaps next week I'll be live back in the studio. I'm not certain yet, but we're going to start things off with... I mentioned last week that I had some Bob Bailey shows. This one he co-starred in. This is Mayor of the Town with Lionel Barrymore. You would remember him as Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life. It also co-stars Agnes Moorehead, which is a Grand Hour favorite as well. Mayor of the Town, this is one's titled An 11-Year-Old War Orphan with an original air date of the 7th of October, 1942. Thanks for listening.
The makers of Rinso are proud to present The Mayor of the Town, starring Lionel Barrymore.
Good evening. You know, being mayor in a town the size of Springdale isn't exactly the same as being mayor in a bigger town. No. Well, I guess you'd call it a more personal sort of job. Why, I bet I've been let in on just about every individual family problem in Springdale sometime or other. You see, when folks around here go to the polls to elect a public servant, that's just what they mean. Harlow Wilcox here will back me up in that, won't you, Harlow?
Yes, indeed, Mr. Mayor. And by the merest coincidence, that reminds me of another public servant.
Merest coincidence, my foot. Go on in.
Well, this servant gets let in on a goodly share of family problems, too. The weekly wash, for instance. Yes, it's the new anti-sneeze Rinso, all right. And it knows how to make short work of the toughest wash day problem. In Springdale, for instance, the water is hard as a rock, but Rinso bubbles right up into heaps of rich, creamy suds that will soak your clothes clean as a whistle, often in as little as 10 minutes. Then a few quick finger rubs on the extra soiled places, and your clothes are ready to rinse. I hope you'll try Rinso soon, wherever you live. And now, the mayor of the town.
Mayor, Jimmy Stevens is in the parlor.
Jimmy Stevens? Mm-hmm. Is he back from England?
Well, if he isn't, then his twin brother is sitting in there. Come on, see, and see for yourself.
Jimmy, well, I'm glad to see you, son. Come in, come in.
Hello, Mayor.
Had you dinner?
Yes, I headed down to the hotel.
Well, sit down, sit down. I heard most of your broadcasts from England. Oh, they were swell.
I'm going back next week. They're not giving commentators much rest right now. Mayor, there's something I want to ask you.
What?
Well, I'm in a bit of a jam. You see, I brought a kid back from England with me. Thought Mother could take him, but she's had an attack of appendicitis.
Oh, that's too bad.
I just received word today that I had to go back the first of the week to do a new series of broadcasts from London. Mm. And that doesn't give me any time to find a home for him. I thought you might be willing to help me out.
Well, in what way, Jimmy?
I want you to take the boy.
Oh, now, Jim, this is no kind of a household to bring a boy into. An old man and an old housekeeper. How old is he?
1,000 years old inside. Actually, about 11. You see, his father and mother were killed. They lived in a small village near Dover. I found him sitting by their bodies, just sitting there, not crying, not saying a word. So I took him back to London, and then when I left London, I brought him home with me.
Did he want to come?
He never said. He never says much of anything. It's like he was dead inside.
Poor little tyke.
Sometimes he cries at night if he thinks no one's around. And he keeps watching the sky. And when the planes go overhead, his eyes look the way they looked the night I found him.
Where is he now?
Down at the hotel.
Well, did he know that you've come to me?
Yes, he took it a little hard at first. You see, every bit of that love that he had for his parents, he's fastened on me. He follows me every place I go, like a little puppy.
Mm.
He seems to be obsessed with the idea that something might happen to me every time I'm out of his sight.
Well, your leaving must be quite a blow to him.
I've made him a promise that I'd come back. He believes in me, Mayor, and he believes in that promise. But meantime, he needs an anchorage. I know it's a big thing to ask, but...
Well, bring him to me. I don't know what Murillo will say, but bring him to me. Ronnie, this was my room when I was a little boy. Now it's going to be yours.
It's very nice, sir.
Those books are books I used to like to read when I was about your age. And that baseball bat and ball Jimmy sent over. He thought you might learn to play while he was gone.
Jimmy sent it?
Yeah.
Oh, isn't it a beauty, sir?
It's a fine bat. I taught Jimmy to hold his first bat when he was smaller than you were.
I'll bet he's a topping player. Did you ever notice his muscles, sir?
Did I notice them? I helped him grow them.
Listen, it's a plane. Turn out the lights, sir. Turn them out quickly.
Oh, now, Ron.
Turn them out. Please turn them out, sir. Please turn them out.
All right, Ronnie. Come here by the window.
But, sir, I...
Come here, Ronnie. Do you know what time it is? It's 8:30. And you know how I know? That's the non-stop flight. It always goes over at 8:30. I've never known her to be more than 30 seconds one way or the other out since she's been flying. And that's a friendly plane, Ronnie. Every night when it goes over, it says, good evening, Mayor. It's 8:30. Time for the judge to be arriving for his game of checkers.
We used to watch the planes, Mummy and Daddy and I. We used to go up on a hill and wave at them. But one night the planes came down. The planes came down, and it was the end of the world. It was the end of the world.
Oh, now, child. Come here. Are you too big a boy to sit on my knee?
No, sir.
Well, there you are now. You know, Ronnie, all my life I've wanted a son. Someone to take fishing, to the movies, someone to watch play baseball, and someone to take to circuses, and someone just about your age.
What's a circus?
What's a circus? What's a circus? Why, it's the smell of popcorn and the music of bands. It's elephants and clowns and trapeze artists. It's pink lemonade and a ringmaster with a long black whip. It's cotton candy and peanuts. It's a present that's labeled to all kids in America from P.T. Barnum.
Ladies and gentlemen, knock down the milk bottles and win a
coupon.
Give us 50 cents worth.
Oh, my.
Don't
beat us
a popcorn.
Candy
popcorn.
Beat us popcorn. We'll have a little everything.
Oh, my.
Hot dogs. Get your red hot hot dogs. Hot dogs here. Get your
two hot dogs here. And two bottles of sarsaparilla.
Oh, my.
Right up and ride the Ferris wheel, ladies and gentlemen. Step right up for the tallest, the fastest ride in the world. 25 cents a ticket.
Two bits.
Two, please.
Oh, my.
Hey, pink lemonade. Get your fresh pink lemonade
out. Two, please. Oh, my.
I wish I had the spanking of both of you.
I don't know why we should be sick, Marilyn.
Well, I do. Nobody's stomach in the world could hold the stuff you ate.
Why, Marilyn, go away. Please go away.
Open your mouth.
I won't.
Open your mouth.
I won't do it.
I took my castor oil,
sir. I hate castor oil.
But it's good for you, sir.
Well, I won't take it.
You aren't very brave, are you, sir?
Huh?
There, you see? Out of the mouths of babes. Open your mouth. That's a big man. That's a nice big man.
Marilla, you're a horrible, designing, unpleasant old woman.
I've always been one to do my duty where I saw it. Them that goes to the circus pays the price. Good night, boys.
Ronnie, you know what we're going to do someday?
What, sir?
We're going to take Marilla to the circus. Now, you see, Ronnie, you hold the baseball bat between your hands like this.
Yes, sir.
Got it straight? First you spit on your hands, then you rub dirt on it. Then you grip the bat between your hands. Now you throw the ball for me, and I'll show you how to hit it.
Ready, sir?
Ready?
Uh-oh.
Come on, Mayor. Ronnie.
Oh, Mayor!
This is where we take it on the land.
Yes, sir. Isn't the sea beautiful, sir? Isn't the sea beautiful?
Yeah, this is the life, isn't it, son? A taste of salt on your lips and the roll of a deck under your feet, a spanking breeze at your back.
The coast back there, it looks a little like the coast of Dover. The gulls wheel just like that, and the cliffs are straight and tall. My father used to say they were the sentinels of England. Do you know, sir, sometimes I miss England.
Oh, of course you do. Tell me, Ronnie, what do you think about when someone mentions the word England?
Why, I guess I think of Westminster Abbey, the way it looked when my father took me there, and the way I used to ride my bicycle down the hills in Lancashire, where we used to go in the summer. I think of the crowds in Piccadilly and Leicester Square. And I think of my mother and father standing at a gate and me running down a hill to meet them.
Yes, that's what you think of. And I think of casement windows that knew Raleigh and Drake. Cathedrals that have known centuries of English prayers. Houses that have fathered generations of English dreams. For me, England's the tavern where Shakespeare and Ben Jonson used to sit. And it's the flag that Nelson died for, and Rupert Brooke, and the Duke of Kent. And it's the people, too, the people who fight in the memory of all these things, who've dug their fists into the earth and will die but never give up.
Like my father and mother.
Yes, Ronnie, like your father and mother. They taught you all about England. Now you're going to learn about America. You're going to learn about George Washington and Lou Gehrig. And Thomas Edison and James Fenimore Cooper. You're going to have a look at the inside workings of our democracy.
I care not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. This, sir, the people's government, made for the people, made by the people, and answerable to the people. 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bonds which have connected them with another, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Beautiful up here on the hilltop, isn't it, sir? The stars are so bright.
Ronnie, I heard you crying last night. I went in, but you were asleep. I didn't want to wake you. Well, you hadn't done that for so long now. What was the matter?
I was dreaming about airplanes. They were big, like black birds, and their wings cast a shadow over the earth.
Yeah?
The bullets came down like rain. The bombs split the earth open, and I was running to escape them. And suddenly, when it seemed I must be killed, I saw a man in front of me. And it was Jimmy. And he opened his arms, and I ran toward him. But as I ran, he fell. And when I reached him, He was already dead. And it was the end of the world. But I didn't care. I wanted it to end.
There. Now, it was only a dream.
He's dead. I know he's dead.
No, he isn't dead. He said he'd come back, you remember? He promised.
Promises don't count for much anymore.
Ronnie, I thought you were happy. I thought you liked America and being here with me.
For a while, I forgot about the planes and how quietly dead people lie on the ground. I forgot that all the promises I'd believed in were broken.
Because of a dream?
Because I loved my mother and father, and they're dead. Because I love Jimmy, and he's dead too.
Oh, come now. Let's go down to the house, son. We'll have a game of checkers. Hey, give me a hand. If Jim's all right, if he isn't dead, then would you believe things are all right again? If he isn't dead, would you have faith again?
I might.
Thank you, Mayor. Come in the parlor.
Run upstairs and get the checkers, Ronnie. They're in my room.
Yes, sir. I've been waiting for you. Stayed a long time on the hill.
What is it, Jerry? White as a sheet, really?
There was a raid in London.
Jim?
He's dead. Says so in all the papers.
Marilla.
Mayor, are you ill? You look like a ghost. Here, sit down.
Shall I call the doctor?
No, I'm all right.
Oh, it's too bad. But don't look like that. It isn't the end of the world.
You're mistaken, Marilla. That's just what it is. It's the end of a world that I've been building.
You know, one of my favorite people in Springdale is Minnie, the mayor's secretary. Well, yesterday I was walking by a grocery store, and out came Minnie, her arms loaded down with packages.
Hello, Harold.
Hi, Minnie. Going home?
Yes, I am.
Let me carry your packages for you.
Thanks, Harold.
Well, can this be a box of Rinso?
Aren't you the sly one, though? You know very well it is.
Well, I somehow don't think of you as keeping house in addition to holding down a job.
What do you think I do, live in the park? I'm a very good housekeeper, if I do say so myself.
I'll bet you are. Anybody who's smart enough to use the new anti-sneeze Rinso knows plenty about keeping house all right.
Well, you know, the mayor keeps me hopping, so I haven't got forever and a day to spend on housework. That's one reason I use Rinso.
I know. The new anti-sneeze Rinso certainly makes short work of jobs like dishwashing, for instance. And as I always tell the folks, those Rinso suds are tough on grease, but mighty easy on your hands.
My budget, too. I'm watching that pretty close these days.
That's right. Costs less than a cent a day to use Rinso for dishwashing.
Well, here we are. Thanks for carrying my packages home, Harold.
You're welcome, Minnie.
Be seeing you.
Bye. I always did like Minnie. There's a girl who knows what she's talking about. And now for Act Two of The Mayor of the Town.
Ronnie, I brought you some ice cream. It's chocolate.
I'm not hungry, sir. I don't feel very well.
But you haven't eaten anything for 3 days. You can't go on like this.
I'm not hungry.
Son, won't you eat just because I ask you to?
I've got a lump in my throat. Nothing will go past it.
Oh, Ronnie.
We used to play all day in the sun. And sometimes at night we'd play outside until bedtime. There's no place to play anymore.
Well, you can play here as late and as long as you want.
Once I could play at Dover as long as I wanted, but not anymore. Sometimes my mother would come down on the beach with us, and her hair would blow in the wind, and she would laugh. At night, she'd come in to tuck me in, and she'd sing. And after a while, I'd go to sleep to the sound of her singing. I never dreamt then. I didn't know about the planes.
Oh, child.
I wish I could hear her sing once more.
I wouldn't be afraid to go to sleep then.
Ronnie, I'll take the ice cream down. I'll be back to see you again before you go to sleep.
How is he? Is he all right?
Oh, not really.
What are you crying about?
Here. Take this dish. I'm going into my wife's room.
Oh, don't go in that empty, cold old room. Come on down to the library.
I've got to talk to Anne. Anne, you'd know what to do if you were here, wouldn't you? You always knew what to do for broken hearts. He won't eat, and he can't sleep. And if he doesn't, he's going to die. Did you ever see a little boy of 11 that wanted to die? Well, he's older than I am. And then, he's the son of our hearts. He even looks a little like you sometimes. What can I say to him? How can I reach him? He has to sleep. He has to sleep.
Mayor, who's in the room with Ronnie?
Why, no one.
Well, someone is. Come with me and see. I came up to see how he was, and as I came to the door, I heard a woman singing.
A woman singing?
Yes. Then I came to get you.
Open the door, Marie. Gently.
Oh, thank goodness. Look, he's asleep. Why, there's no one here.
No, no one at all. But he's asleep for the first time in days. Asleep. And Marilla, sometime, when he wakes up, I think he's going to be hungry. You better fix something.
Could I have some more cookies, Miss Marilla?
Good heavens, you've had six. You'll be sick.
Did you have a good night's sleep, son?
Yes, I did. I didn't dream at all. Would you like to hit a few baseballs, sir?
Of course I would.
Oh, look, someone's stopping.
Who on earth is that?
It's Jim. Oh, Jim.
Hello, Ronnie. Hello, Mayor.
Oh, Jim.
Oh, you're getting big, son.
Oh, Jim, this is a surprise. The paper said you were missing in the attack Monday night.
I took off by a bomber Monday night, but it was a highly secret affair. I read about my demise in the papers coming down here. I'm sorry you were worried.
They didn't bomb you?
Oh, there were a few bombs flying around, but they didn't come any closer than my eyebrows. I'm hard to hit. Pretty skinny, you know.
I am, too. But I'm getting fatter.
Ronnie's gained 7 pounds.
Well, I'll take him off your hands now. Mother's a lot better, and she said to bring him up.
Take him off my hands?
I'll never be able to thank you enough for keeping them for me. Ronnie, now we're going to do all those things I promised you. We'll go fishing and horseback riding and swimming.
That would be fine, sir.
Run up and start to get your things ready, son. I'll be up in a few minutes to help you.
Yes, sir.
There's a great change in him, Mayor. I don't know how to thank you.
Oh, well, I didn't do anything. I love that boy. I look at him sometimes, at the young English soul of him, clear and level-headed and full of integrity, and I think there's the best of England.
He's a fine boy.
Yeah. I felt a grave responsibility toward him, but he's one forlorn little boy who's been labeled enemy and marked for slaughter. No wonder he's been terrified. No wonder he wakes up crying in the night and winces when the planes go over. This isn't a pretty world to be 11 years old in. His heart is broken because of an incident at Dover.
And the heart of England bleeds because of a million incidents like it.
Yes, yes, I know. Well, he's been happier here, though. He's gone to school, had a few black eyes and bloody noses, but he's been the better for him. He's learned to run freely in the sunshine again. It's enough to break your heart to know that he had to be taught those things.
But he's learning. He's learned that faith can be answered, and that promises can be kept, and that's what we must teach the children of all races.
Oh, so much is gone, so many of the old landmarks, so many of the old traditions. Sometimes I wonder if...
Don't wonder, Jimmy. Don't wonder for a moment. The grass will grow over the scarred countrysides. The buildings will be built again, and these youngsters that we shelter in our homes and in our hearts will go back to wiser countries. Everyone who dies for freedom now dies for them, for theirs is the life, blood, and the future of their race. And ours is the responsibility for making the world a safe place for all children again, and then to teach those children how to live in it. Oh, well, I didn't mean to preach at you. I had a son for a few months. I'll miss him. I shall miss him. Here's your hat and your catcher's mitt and your football.
Gee, remember when you broke the window?
Yes, oh, what am I laughing at? It cost me $15. Here, put those socks in the corner there.
And remember when we got sick at the circus? The circus is here again. I was hoping...
Here's your shirts.
Oh, sir, couldn't I stay with you? Couldn't I please stay with you?
Stay with me? Stay with me? Why, boy, but why would you like to stay with me? There isn't much in the house for a young boy. An old man and an old woman and an old house.
It's like home now. It's the only home I have. Oh, I love Jim, too. But I'd like to stay here if it could possibly be arranged, sir. I'd work real hard around the yard, and I'd try not to eat too much so I wouldn't be expensive and...
Ronnie, you've just made yourself a sale. Cha! What are you crying about?
You're crying, sir.
Nonsense. I just got hay fever. Come on, let's go find Marilla and Jim. Marilla! Jim! Get on your hats. We're going to the circus. We're going to the circus. Hand me the castor oil.
Oh.
Marilla, open your mouth.
Oh, listen. Look, sir. There goes the nonstop right on time. It's 8:30. Time for the judge to be arriving for a game of checkers.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Thank you, lads, and thank you, Ad Council, for that FCC obligation for their first half of the program. We heard Mayor of the Town, titled An 11-Year-Old War Orphan, with an original air date of the 7th of October, 1942. Again, Bob Bailey is featured in that as well. It starred Lionel Barrymore, who, like I said at the top of the hour, played Mr. Potter in It's a Wonderful Life, also with Agnes Moorehead. That show aired for 7 years on various networks. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. for the second half of the program. I'm going to feature another Bob Bailey stalwart. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with an original air date of the 17th of March, 1957. This one is called The Clever Chemist Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Harry Branson at Philadelphia Mutual Life and Casualty Company.
Oh, hello, Harry. What's with you?
John, I have a case I'd like you to handle for us. It's somewhat unusual.
Have you ever handed me one that wasn't completely screwy?
I said unusual.
And I said screwy. So now that we understand each other, what's it all about?
Well, absolutely nothing yet. But I'm very apprehensive about one of our clients.
Oh, Harry, you're the biggest worrywart I ever knew.
What was that?
I said, who is this client?
Dr. Walter Merrill.
Merrill? The scientist?
That's right.
Nobel Prize winner? The man who worked out the molecular orbital contraction, something or other?
Yes, yes, that's the one. As I say, John, I'm worried.
Well, who wouldn't be about him? I'll be right down to see you.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Philadelphia Mutual Life and Casualty Insurance Company in Philadelphia. Where else? Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Clever Chemist matter. Expense of transportation and incidentals, Hartford to New York to Philadelphia. I didn't even stop to check my bag, but headed directly for the Philly Mutual building on Walnut Street. Harry Branson is a good insurance man, but a great worrier. Nonetheless, he'd given me some pretty important credit, too. And after all, what do we live for? Hey, I keep the change.
Thanks, Doc. John, what took you so long?
Oh, now, what's the matter, Harry? Forget to pay the rent on your office or just forgot the key?
No, John, as a matter of fact, I have the key right... This is hardly the place for levity.
Well, surely you haven't been waiting here on the sidewalk ever since you called me.
No, I haven't, but by checking plane schedules, I was able to determine when you'd arrive almost to the minute and not wanting to waste time taking you upstairs to the office.
Pretty urgent matter, huh?
Which for you should be here shortly.
What? Well, now, usually I arrange these things myself, Harry.
Yes, and how we pay...
Out of you. Oh, Harry, you touch me to the quick.
Oh, now, please don't misunderstand me. I don't mean that there's ever anything really dishonest about
you
your
don't?
Expense account.
Well,
it's only...
you ought to. Believe me, I'll pad it to the hilt if I think I can get away with it.
Anyway, the most important reason for engaging the car was so that you can leave immediately...
Malaga?
Yes, New Jersey. It's a...
Is that where Dr. Merrill is?
Yes. As is his custom, he chooses to work in some isolated spot where he can't possibly be disturbed. He and his colleague, that is.
Colleague? I always heard that he worked alone, freelance.
And you heard right. However, he now has a professor, Theodore Nash, with him.
Nash?
One of our... to Dr. Merrill.
Never heard of him.
John, they're working together on what I'm sure is some top-secret project.
Oh? Oh, say, wait. Didn't Merrill have something to do with the early rocket experiments?
Precisely. Which is why I suspect their present work may have something to do with the space satellite or intercontinental missiles or something of the sort.
Yeah, possible. But what has all this got to do with you?
Their insurance. Dr. Merrill has had a policy with us for some years. $25,000.
Oh, and...
he took out a policy for $10,000.
Beneficiary?
Nash made Dr. Merrill his beneficiary.
Oh, well, that sort of thing is often done between men working together. Harry, you know that.
Yes, so that if anything happens to one, the other will be financially able to carry on what they've started.
Sure, right.
Which is no doubt why Dr. Merrill changed the beneficiary of his policy to Theodore Nash.
So? What's the worry?
No sooner was the change made than I received a letter of protest from Dr. Merrill's daughter.
Who's she?
Mrs. Howard Harding. She and her husband live in West Philadelphia. He's a welder for an aviation company, I think.
Well, what did she base her protest on, Harry?
She claims her father must have been coerced into changing the policy.
Oh, now, wait a minute. That sounds like the hungry relative who complains about being cut out of the will.
It might. If Mrs. Harding weren't a perfectly well-balanced, intelligent, and I'm sure quite unselfish person, a completely...
Is she good-looking?
Well, yes.
And real sweet to you?
Yes, she is. Now, John, I don't know what you're trying to imply.
They do it every time.
John.
Particularly when there's a bit of money involved. Good-looking insurance broker like you.
And you're a bachelor, too, aren't you, Harry?
John, you're pulling my leg.
Oh, Harry. But then I guess we're all suckers for someone like that.
That has nothing to do with it. I've had these hunches before, John, and they've always been right. Even you will have to admit that.
Yeah. I'll confess that in the cases I've handled for you so far. Why don't you call up Dr. Merrill?
I think the quaint old fellow would die rather than have a phone near enough to disturb him in his work. Oh, there's your rental car waiting at the curb. So off you go, John, and see what you can find out.
Okay, Harry. It all sounds like a lot of nothing you're worried about, but as long as you're willing to pay for it. And I always did like South Jersey this time of year. I drove across the Delaware River Bridge into Jersey and headed for Route 45 to Westville, Woodbury, and finally Pittman, where I picked up Route 47. What Harry had said was true. These hunches of his had a remarkable way of panning out. And yet, who was I to complain? After a pleasant hour's drive through cranberry bog and farm country, through miles of orchards and the intoxicating odor of the peach blossoms, I pulled into the quiet little town of Malaga. Population, I'd say around 500. First stop, the post office.
Dr. Merrill?
Yeah, sure. You go back the way you came, about a mile, till you see the name Wampus Bung.
Wampus what?
Wampus means cat. Bung, bungalow. Wampus Bung.
Yeah.
Yeah, the doctor and the professor got the fourth cottage beyond it. White one with a fence around it.
Yeah, good, thanks.
And if you don't mind, you can take their mail out to them. They haven't been in to pick it up 4 or 5 days now.
Oh, nothing wrong, is there?
Well, who'd know the way those two keep to themselves? You'd think whatever they're working on was the atomic bomb.
Yeah, well...
Just to be sure, you let them know that you're at the gate now before you try to go through the fence.
Oh, what's that supposed to mean?
The professor sees you prowling around, he's liable to take a shot at you.
As I drove back and toward the edge of Little Malaga Lake, the idea of getting shot at by anyone living in this peaceful, quiet place seemed ridiculous. The lake itself, by the way, looked pretty inviting. I made a mental note to come back here on my own sometime after the fishing season opened. As the postmaster had indicated, the fourth cottage beyond Wampus Bung was heavily fenced in, so I gave notice of my arrival. I had barely left the car when the door of the little cottage opened.
Yes? Who is it?
Dr. Merrill?
Oh, yes.
My name is Dollar, sir. Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
Harry Branson?
Yes, sir, that's right. Harry Branson sent me down here to see you.
Come in. I'm most glad to see you. Please, come into the house.
All right, thank you. Is Professor Nash here?
In the laboratory. But please,
as
come
he spoke,
into
the sliding door on the garage at the side of the house opened. A rather swarthy man stepped out, quickly closed the door, and threw a heavy bolt on it. Then looked over toward us suspiciously.
Yes, because it's better that you and I talk in private, alone.
Doctor, who is that?
Oh, yes, Professor.
If we have a visitor. Why do you not bring him here where we can both speak to him?
Oh, yes, of course. This is Mr. Johnny Dollar, Professor Theodore Nash.
Mr. Dollar?
I do, Professor. I'm from your insurance company. Just making a little routine checkup.
Oh, fine. I'm very glad to see you. As a matter of fact, I wish to talk with you. How do you do? Now, come into the laboratory.
Professor, do you think it wise...
Oh, of course, Doctor. Since he is not a man of science, I'm sure there is no harm in his seeing it. And you have an experiment going, remember?
But I wish to
Mr.
speak
Dollar,
to him alone.
Within these four walls, the genius of Dr. Merrill and my own poor efforts are creating things that will startle the world.
Outside, the small building looked like an ordinary two-car garage, someone in need of paint and repair. But inside, it was immaculate and loaded with scientific equipment of all shapes and sorts and sizes. There were racks of test tubes, bottles of chemicals, beakers, a centrifuge, machines and apparatus I'd never seen before, that I imagine much of the world never dreamed of. And all of it as neat as a pin, not so much as a stirring rod out of place.
Ah, look, Doctor. The polymerization step is almost complete.
Eh?
Now you must continue the molecular balance check immediately.
Oh, yes. And you must both leave me. This must not be seen by by anyone.
Yeah, we understand, Doctor. We understand.
I hope you will pardon me, Mr. Dollar.
Yes, of course, Doctor.
Oh, come, Mr. Dollar.
Yes, I will lock the door. Yes.
He does require privacy, doesn't he?
Yes.
Oh, hey, you're not going to bolt that door, are you?
Oh, of course not. Force of habit, I guess. Oh, it is he who keeps things locked so tightly when he's working. Unnecessarily so. But then genius is permitted his idiosyncrasies, huh?
Harry Branson seems to think you two may be working on something to do with guided missiles.
Very perceptive man. But that is something we must not speak about. Now, why have you come here, Mr. Dollar?
Well, like I said, just a routine checkup. We usually do this when a sizable policy has changed.
Oh, there is something unusual about two men working together on important things, ensuring in each other's favor?
Well, no.
But when his daughter perhaps objects...
You know Dr. Merrill's daughter?
Oh, I know about her and about her unfortunate marriage to that day laborer.
Nothing wrong with day labor, Professor?
Yeah, but one who waits for a great man like the doctor to die so that he can get his hands on the insurance money.
You think that's why his daughter objected to the change?
Of course. But his money will be used to further his work by me. And, of course, for the good of humanity.
I see. Well, how soon do you think the doctor will be through with his experiment?
An hour, perhaps two. And then... he will call me in to assist him with the next crucial step.
Why don't I run in town, arrange for a place to stay, grab a bite to eat, and then come back here, huh?
If you like. I'm sorry we have no room in the cottage.
No, don't give it a second thought. I'll see you later. Something of Harry Branson's hunch had passed on to me. A strange feeling about the whole setup. There was something wrong about both Merrill and Nash, particularly the latter. Something I couldn't quite put my finger on. Was Dr. Merrill afraid of Nash? I don't know. Item two, a dollar even for a quick bite in a little cafe along the highway after I'd made arrangements for a room for the night in a private home. It was not much over an hour later when I drove back to the little cottage by the lake. And then I heard it. Someone pounding on the door of the laboratory from the inside. Someone calling for help. Professor!
Open the door!
But the lock's on the inside! Turn the lock!
No!
What?
The bolt on the outside! Please!
Bolt here on the outside. Oh, what are you...
Oh, thank heaven.
Good Lord, Professor. What happened to you? You look like you've been run over by...
Yeah.
Dr. Merrill.
Too late. Too late.
Professor, what happened here?
He beat me. Threw acid at me.
The doctor?
No, the man. Then he killed the doctor with a gun. He killed him.
Who, Professor? Who?
I don't know.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment.
Democracy. To the many who have lived under tyranny, democracy comes as a guiding light, shining on a brighter future. That is because democracy stands for the establishment of government conceived from deep thought and free choice, rather than being based on accident and force. It is also normal that the free choice of a democratic government happens because people who choose their own government are directed by true interests in the welfare of mankind. Democracy has been proven to be mankind's greatest legacy of freedom.
Now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Clever Chemist Matter.
Expense account item three, $10, for the services of one Dr. Frederick Foote, the only resident medico in the little town of Malaga, New Jersey. After pronouncing Dr. Walter Merrill dead, he took the badly beaten Professor Nash to his office clinic. While waiting for Nash to get in good enough shape to talk, I ran up item four, 10 cents, phone call to the sheriff.
who promised to come over as soon as he could enlist the aid of the nearby state police. Finally, Dr. Foote gave the word.
But I suggest you talk with him as little as possible, Mr. Dollar.
In pretty bad shape, huh, Dr. Foote?
The intruder not only beat him severely, but threw a bottle of acid in his face.
Oh?
Professor Nash will never have the use of his left eye again because of that nitric acid.
Has Nash said anything that might help us identify the assailant and killer?
No. Now, please don't talk with him too long.
Professor?
Yes. Yes.
Hello, Professor.
Oh, Mr. Dollar. I will never see again with my left eye. He has told me.
Yes, I know. I'm sorry.
But the great Dr. Merrill, he is dead. What a loss.
Professor. Professor, tell me, did you see the man who attacked you?
Yes.
Can you describe him at all?
Yes, you know, young, not more than 30, 5 feet, 6 or 8, very heavy,
yes,
stocky, and black curly hair.
Yeah?
Hands like a working man, a laborer. Come.
Have you ever seen this man before?
No, I...
Oh, here. Some water.
Thank you.
Do you know why he came in and attacked you and Dr. Murrow?
No.
Was he after something there in the laboratory?
Only to kill Dr. Merrill. I tried to defend him.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dollar, but I think that's enough.
Yes, okay, Dr. Foote. I think I've heard enough. I managed to get back to the cottage by the lake before the police arrived and came up with one very damning piece of evidence. In one of the bedrooms, I found a picture of a wedding couple. It was inscribed, "Love to the dearest father in the world." And next to the bride stood a man who answered perfectly the description Professor Nash had just given me. The husband of Dr. Merrill's daughter, Howard Harding. And then I thought of what Nash had said about Harding. His antagonism, his conviction that Harding was the one who resented the change in the insurance policy. But there was something else, too. That had happened when I talked with Nash in the doctor's office that... By the time I got back to the laboratory, the sheriff and state police arrived. The sheriff, I'm afraid, mussed up any prints that might have been left on the bottle of acid. However, in the weeds outside, a state trooper found the pistol, a .38 caliber Luger that had killed Dr. Merrill. Fingerprints had apparently been wiped off, but the gun was carefully... Fingerprints. Before taking off in a mad dash back to Philadelphia, I stopped at Dr. Foote's and picked up one water tumbler. Item 5, 370 for a tank full of gas. Item 6, 50 cents. Parking in Philadelphia as close as possible to Harry Branson's office.
John, what have you found out about Dr. Merrill?
Harry, he's dead.
Well, oh, dear.
Now, listen. Write down the address of Mr. and Mrs. Howard Harding for me.
His daughter, does she know?
No, she doesn't know yet, and I hope I can avoid telling her before I write it down, will you, man?
Well, yes, of course,
take this. Don't unwrap it, but see that it gets to Ray Kemper at the Federal Bureau, fast. I'll check with him about it later, thanks.
But, now, John...
Harry, this is one time this expense account of mine is going to save you a lot of money. I think. I don't know how many red lights I skipped on the drive out to West Philadelphia, but I felt like a hound dog in a hot scent. The home of Mr. and Mrs. Howard Harding turned out to be in a nice, quiet residential area. I was met at the door by the girl in the wedding picture. A tall, very nice-looking blonde in her late 20s.
Oh, yes?
Mrs. Harding?
I'm Terry Harding.
Well, I'm Johnny Dollar from your father's insurance company.
Oh, good. Come in. Perhaps you can help me make him do something about that policy of his.
Well, that isn't exactly...
Someone has poisoned Daddy's mind, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, what do you mean?
It isn't that I need the money if Daddy dies, which heaven forbid.
No, it doesn't exactly look as though you do.
No, of course we don't. Howard's been doing so wonderfully at Colonial Aviation.
Yes, apparently. And I'd had a notion he was just a laborer or something.
Oh, dear, no. That's what Daddy called him because... Well, because he wasn't too fond of Howard. And that is the way Howard started before we were married, but now he's one of the officers of the company.
Where is he, Mrs. Harding?
Well, as a matter of fact, I thought you were Howard when you drove up just now. He's been fishing.
Fishing?
On some little lake over in Jersey. He goes every Saturday all by himself.
Malaga Lake?
No, Malaga's where Daddy was. Mm-hmm. He and that...
That what, Mrs. Harding?
Well, I don't know. It's Howard, I guess.
What do you mean?
How Mallory just never liked or trusted him, even though they've never actually met. When Daddy changed his insurance to name that professor, there is something wrong about that man, Mr. Dollar.
What, Mrs. Harding?
I don't know. Daddy always worked alone until he came along. Daddy's such an alert, bright-eyed little busybody in spite of his age.
Wait a minute. Your father...
Like a cute little wound-up spring, hopping about like a...
Mrs. Harding.
Yes?
Mrs. Harding, when I saw your father...
You've seen Daddy. Well, then you know what I mean.
He was tired. Almost in a daze. He spoke with difficulty.
Oh, no. You're mistaken. He chatters away like a jaybird. What is it, Mr. Dollar?
Well, he must have been doped. He looked as though...
Hi, honey. Well, I'm just as lousy a fisherman as usual. Not a single... Oh, excuse me.
Mr. Harding, just tell me one thing.
Well, that depends. Who are you?
Mr. Dollar's from the insurance company, darling.
Not Johnny Dollar.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I've certainly heard of you. Tell me...
No, you tell me, Harding. Where have you been?
Why, fishing.
Where?
Over in Jersey.
Where in Jersey?
Little private lake.
Where?
Over near Mount Holly. One place I know of where nobody else ever goes, where I can get rid of the cobwebs at my job. Hey, wait a minute, Dollar. What is this?
Harding, you've been identified as the man who murdered Dr. Walter Merrill.
What?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Harding. I'm sorry, but it's true.
No,
what are you talking about, Dollar?
You didn't know about it?
Of course not. How could I? Where did it happen? How?
At his place in Malaga.
Oh.
Professor Nash, I'll kill that man.
You'll take it easy. You seem to forget that so far you're the only suspect in the case.
You're out of your mind. If it was anybody, it was that Nash. Never have trusted that man. And the insurance policy. If anybody killed Dr. Merrill, it was that professor.
Now listen to me. Nash was with Dr. Merrill when he was killed there in his laboratory.
Of course he was.
But Nash was attacked also, beaten, acid thrown at him. He lost the sight of one eye because of it.
And I tell you... You're sure?
Yes, of course I'm sure. It was I who found them. Nash beating against the inside of the door of that laboratory, crying for help. A door that was bolted on the outside.
But, Dollar, I... You're sure of that?
I'm sure.
Well, I still think... Oh, Terry, I'm sorry, honey. Here, let me...
Oh, Howard, it's so terrible.
Better answer that phone, Howard.
Yeah. Hello? Yes? Oh, yes. It's for you, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, thanks.
Terry, here, come on. You've got to pull yourself together.
Johnny Dollar.
Right.
John, this is Harry Branson. I just received a call from Mr. Kemper at the Federal Bureau.
Yes.
He says he must see you immediately.
Call him back, Harry. Tell him I'll be there in 15 minutes. Harding, just to keep things straight, I wouldn't leave this house if I were you.
Well, now, wait a minute,
just
Dollar.
Just sit tight. I think you're in the clear. More red lights got passed up on my way into the Philadelphia offices of the Bureau. So Ray Kemper felt that whatever he'd found was important. If so, it would back up one of my suspicions. But in view of the circumstances, that bolted door in the laboratory, for instance, how could it?
Important is putting it mildly, Johnny.
The prints you found on the water glass, Ray.
Three sets. One, yours.
Yeah, well, naturally.
Two, Dr. Frederick Foote, who is currently practicing medicine.
I know, in the town of Malaga, New Jersey. That's where the glass came from.
Oh, but the third set of prints.
Yes.
I had to go into the international file for them. And Johnny...
Nash? Theodore Nash?
Nash? Nashevsky.
What?
Theodore Nashevsky, chemist from one of our not-so-friendly countries.
Huh?
Expert on explosives. One time, he was thought to have attempted to enter this country. That was in 1940.
Ray, have you got any pictures on him?
Plenty. From the time he was a kid. Here. Tell me how you picked up these prints.
The beard in this picture. That looks like him, all right. Yeah, this too. With a shaved head. Almost as though he tried to keep changing his appearance.
Johnny,
oh, Wait a sec. This picture of him as a youngster. This eye patch on his left eye.
Our dossier is pretty complete. He was quite an athlete until he injured that eye.
But it doesn't show in these other pictures, and he hasn't a glass eye.
No, his eye always looked perfectly natural. Now, Johnny, if you have information...
Ray, this has done it for me. Thanks.
Hey, now, just a minute.
I'll see you.
Hey, Johnny! This is Kemper. Give me a man to tail Johnny Dollar.
All the way back to Malaga, New Jersey, I hoped my rental car would hold together. It did, in spite of the fact I pushed it all the way. International intrigue is a bit out of my line, but this time, so help me, I was beginning to feel like an FBI man. I stopped at state police headquarters along the way, and according to them, Nash was off the hook. Not only because of the acid thrown in his face, but even more important, because of my own testimony that I'd found them locked in that laboratory. I stopped again at the lab. Nothing. Then back to Dr. Foote's office.
Very well, Mr. Dollar. When they arrive, I'll insist that they wait for you.
All right, thanks, Doctor. Well, Professor, you're sitting up.
Oh, have they found anything, Mr. Dollar? Have they found the man who attacked us and killed poor Dr. Merrill?
Professor, I think I have.
Oh?
But tell me something.
Yes, of course.
Your government doesn't pay you very well, does it?
Merrill and I were not working for the government, Mr. Dollar. Although, of course, the results of our work...
I'm talking about your government, your own real boss.
I do not understand.
No doubt it's very much interested in anything this country develops in the line of guided missiles, that sort of thing.
Mr. Dollar...
Now, let me go on. Merrill was doing important work. Stuff that would be of great value to any country in the world.
Of course.
Your country would have paid you well for the results of his work. But, brother, they'll never get it.
I do not know what you are talking
money,
about.
Money, the loot from Merrill's insurance, sure. Sure, it was enough to get you out of here after you'd gained the knowledge you need of Merrill's work.
See here, Dollar.
After you'd killed him, before he could give to his country, the United States, what he'd invented...
You are a fool. I was beaten,
too. The poor old man put up a pretty stiff fight, didn't he?
Do you think I would have done this to myself?
Yourself away earlier when you reached out for a glass of water I handed you right here in this room. A man who'd lost his sight in one eye would have lost his aim until he got used to it. Funny, though, it didn't come to me until
later.
You
are mad.
You haven't seen out of that left eye since you were a kid.
I tell you, you are mad.
And a little acid burn to make it look like somebody had thrown it at you would be well worth the alibi it gave you. Feodor.
Feodor?
That's right, Feodor Nashevsky.
Listen to me. You were the one who found us locked in, the door bolted from the outside. You found us.
Yeah, also the cord, the string you used to pull the bolt too. That you looped over the bolt and pulled after you got inside.
You couldn't have. I dropped it in the vat of acid.
Yeah. Thanks. I was bluffing. But I made a lucky guess.
What?
Oh, what a brain. Nashevsky, I'm sure glad you're not working on our side. The capsule he fished out of his pocket never got to his mouth. And I'm afraid he won't see very well out of his other eye for a while. My knuckles still hurt. And it was lucky for him that the police arrived. I'm afraid I don't like guys like him. Expense account total, including all the incidentals I could think of, and transportation back to Hartford, $84.35. Remarks? Well, don't beef on this one, Harry. The criminal, in spite of being the name beneficiary, doesn't get paid. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a real close look at a little-known but very dramatic side of Hollywood. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Harry Bartell, Howard McNear, Forrest Lewis, Jack Crucian, Russell Thorson, Frank Gersel, and Bob Bruce. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
To round out the hour, we heard Bob Bailey and Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Clever Chemist Matter, with an original air date of the 17th of March, 1957. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. A little programming note, if I'm not on next week at 6, I might be on at 5. I don't know. We're waiting to hear back from program director. The new fall schedule is going to come out. Anyway, it's been a pleasure playing radio dramas for everybody who listens. Thanks. Thank you.
Off in a boat on a river.